You're driving home with Sly on the Big FM 93.7 and the Big AM 1380. Joining us now, criminal defense attorney Casey Hoff. He operates out of Sheboygan, but if you get in some sort of legal trouble, he can help you as long as you live in Wisconsin. Casey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sly.
Interesting cases. Let's start out with what's going on at the University of Wisconsin. This alleged tagger, Denzel McDonald, was apprehended the other day at the Humanities Building. They had been looking for him for 2 weeks. For the last 6 months, he has been spray-painting graffiti all over university buildings, you know, protesting racism and white privilege. He also evidently has allegedly been disorderly while doing it and making threatening comments. Allegedly, of course, we have to be careful. Can tagging be a felony?
Well, I believe it's a misdemeanor in most cases, but it probably could if it ranged in the area of, I could be mistaken about that, but basically there's graffiti laws and then there's also criminal damage to property, and criminal damage to property is another issue, and it depends on the value of the property.
Well, this is over $4,000, so evidently they are charging him with a felony.
Wow. Well, that is certainly possible, and that's something that, you know, obviously is very serious. Now, I understand that the real beef here is how the officers actually arrested him. Mm-hmm. They came into this classroom. One of the officers apparently thought the class had not begun yet or was not in session, but it actually was in session. So there's all these students that are upset about it and many faculty that are upset about it. And Sly, what I think about this case is the emotion obviously runs, I think, from the message, and the message is one of anti-racism, which is a good message. I mean, we want to extinguish racism wherever we see it, and there have been some troubling incidents at the University of Wisconsin-Madison towards minorities, and so it's obviously understandable that you would protest that, but you cross a line if you go and you and you're got graffiti all over the place, because that is university property, and it takes a lot to clean that up. And we're talking about the damage. I think they cited $4,000 as the damage to actually clean up the graffiti. And so, you know, you cross that line from speech into damaging someone's property or the university's property, and that's where it becomes a crime. And so, I mean, what do I think about the way that the police did this in this particular circumstance going into the class? It seems like the UW police chief is saying, or at least they try to err on the policy of not going in when the class is in session. But there's nothing illegal about doing that, as far as I can see.
Because, well, have you seen the footage of the arrest?
Yeah. It looked relatively calm with respect to the officers asking him to come outside.
I would say not only calm but respectful.
Respectful, and that's how we expect officers to behave, and that's how they should behave. I mean, you know, is it an ideal environment? Was the student embarrassed? I'm sure he was embarrassed. And
I have to tell you something. I don't think he was embarrassed. I saw the way he was talking to the police officer, and he was not contrite. He was not shaking. He was passive aggressive. He was uncooperative, and he did not deny the charges. He said, "Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't." No, I'm sorry. I didn't get any sense in the from what I saw. Now, there maybe was something else that he was embarrassed by the situation at all,
and that may not have been. But the professors who had written on this had discussed the fact that they felt it was embarrassing and humiliating, and that's where I'm getting. That's where I'm getting that from.
Well, this is ratcheted up. Let me play a story from WISC-TV3 in Madison on what's happened now.
Students at UW-Madison are asking for the resignation of officers after a student was pulled out of class to be arrested for vandalism. News 3's Valina Jones has more on the students' demands.
Students of color particularly feel unsafe.
Can we talk to you outside, ma'am? Appreciate it.
It's this video of UW student Denzel McDonald being arrested by campus police outside of his class for an alleged connection to a string of graffiti on campus that urged students to ask for the resignation of the officers.
Everything about the case was mishandled, and it could have been looked at differently. And what's also alarming is we have had clear cases of racial hatred on this campus, and we have not seen the same energy and tenacity towards investigating those cases.
Tuesday, students met with UW Police Chief Sue Reisling in a discussion hosted by the journalism school to address the arrest and racial climate on campus.
This incident was troubling, to be sure, but the problems are deeper, they're structural, and I think they won't go away unless there's a broader effort, a longer-term effort, and there's got to be some recognition of the validity of the claims that students of color make.
Other demands requested by students during the meeting include the investigation against McDonald be dismissed, his graduation not be jeopardized, and control over campus police, giving the chief a 48-hour period to respond before taking further action.
The further action is the continuous sort of culmination of student power, and we'll take any measures necessary in garnering support from the community, other university stakeholders, and whatever we deem necessary.
In a statement to News 3, the university said, quote, they share the concerns of students reflected in the list of demands provided. We look forward to continuing to dialogue with the campus community about how to best make everyone feel welcome.
Students are planning a walkout for 11:30 at Bascom Hill tomorrow morning. In Madison, I'm Valina Jones, WISC News 3.
Now, last week, Chief Sue Reisling apologized for the class disruption and noted that the officer did not follow normal procedure. The group of students says it's willing to work with the university and police. McDonald's charges have been referred to the DA's office.
Your reaction to that, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, here's what's troubling to me. I'm always a fan of, we need to reward good police work and good police behavior. And if the police officer didn't follow a normal protocol, that's something that can be addressed by the administration, the you know, the upper echelons of the police there. But the bottom line is, having worked in the line of criminal defense, as I have for my entire career, I've seen lots of different situations where it's been troubling for me how you know, people have been handled, how defendants have been handled, in situations where they're arrested, and sometimes not handled very nicely.
Oh, you don't think this is similar to Rodney King's treatment?
No. This is, and it's good that we have the police body cam footage of it, because this is something where I think it's an example of good police work. Now, you can argue about whether they should have gone into the classroom while it was in session or waited until it was out of session, but if the police officer had a reasonable belief that it wasn't in session, I mean, I don't see how this is all that controversial. Again, I think the main controversy from this stems from the fact that you have a message of anti-racism, you have a series of different incidents that they want the university to have handled differently and investigate more properly, and that's fine. That's an argument that you can have with the administration. But
well, just because somebody says an incident is racial doesn't make it racial.
Well, right. I know. I agree with you. But all I'm saying is, I think what's being taken out on the police is doing the police work, which is what they're supposed to do, which is to investigate and arrest people who they have probable cause to believe has committed a crime. And just because the messenger is spreading an arguably, I wouldn't even say arguably, a good message of anti-racism, obviously, doesn't mean that they're immune from criminal prosecution if they commit a crime. I mean, you have to be held responsible if you're going to commit a crime, even in the name of good work or of good messaging. You have to be willing to take the responsibility for that. And, you know, that's, I think, what we have largely.
Casey Hoff with us on the Big FM 93.7 and the Big AM 1380. All right, it is very clear that the University of Wisconsin and its police chief are trying to mollify these students and reduce the tensions. But in doing so, if you were a police officer serving that community and you saw this happening, and you saw that bust, and now you have people calling for the ouster of a police officer, would you feel real competent to go back out on that beat to feel as though the chief had your back?
No, I mean, the chief needs to have their officers back, obviously with the exception of the officers doing bad things. We want them to be held accountable for that. But in this situation, I reiterate, I don't see anything unusual about this, with the exception of going into a classroom. But again, these are campus police. You know, they're investigating situations and incidents that happen on campus. Students are often in class. And so if they had truly been trying, I mean, I don't see anybody disputing the fact that they've been trying to get in touch with this the suspect for 2 weeks. And oftentimes that's what police officers do. You know, look, they could have come into the classroom right away. They didn't have to get in touch with him or try to get in touch with him for 2 weeks. And if they had been doing that and there had been a lack of response, you know, what are they supposed to do? I mean, that's the question that I'm not sure is really the answer. Is the classroom supposed to be a place of immunity from arrest? No. I mean, this is a public university, and the police did not need, as far as I can see, a search warrant to go in there. I mean, you know, people can come into the classroom. And so,
well, you went to this institution. I didn't. I noticed the lecture hall was three-quarters empty. Would it be easy to misconstrue the number of students in that class as a class had not begun as of yet?
You know, I don't know. Probably not, especially if it's only, you know, if it's relatively empty. And even if there was a mistake made, again, I come back to the point that that doesn't make this an illegal arrest, and I'm not sure anybody claiming it was an illegal arrest. This is something that happens all the time. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times, Bly, that people get arrested at their place of employment without having had any sort of prior contact with police. In other words, no attempt to contact them before, but yet
right.
They were arrested. This is what happens.
Stand by. We'll talk more with criminal defense attorney Casey Hoff on the Big FM 93.7 and the Big AM 1380. You're driving home with Sly on the Big AM 1380 and the Big FM 93.7.
Paul from AMS with us on the Big FM 93.7.
We are having an inventory clearance sale, and we've had some people come in and take excellent advantage of that, and we've got lots and lots of really good equipment left, too.
So your location?
Right near the corner of PD and Verona Road on the southwest side of Madison. You can call us at 608-274-7400, amsmadison.com, or you can even like us on Facebook.
Sounds great. Paul from AMS.
Criminal defense attorney Casey Hoff with us. Let's talk a little bit about something that's happening in your hometown, Middleton, Wisconsin. Middleton High School, there is a park that sits adjacent to Middleton High School where a group of parents have started a Jesus Lunch Club where they hand out some food to the kids, make some food, and read Bible passages. There has been quite the reaction to this. The school district has said that they're violating the policy of that park because the school district leases the park and uses it for school activities. There is a post on that park saying that you've got to follow school rules. But this is confusing because the city has also issued a permit to these parents to use the shelter facility. Your thoughts?
Well, I think they're running a very dangerous precedent by trying to kick the Jesus Lunch people out of the park. And I would say this, whether this was a Muslim group trying to proselytize or a Jewish group trying to proselytize or for that matter, an atheist group like Ann-Laurie Gaylor's group did the other day in sort of a protest of this Jesus Lunch situation. I mean, this is something that is so fundamental, the First Amendment and freedom of speech and you know, yes, it'll probably come down to a technical argument about the lease versus the renting of this park and whether the group had jurisdiction. But let's take a step back for a minute. This is Middleton High School. This is a public high school. It happens to be my alma mater. It's a place where we're supposed to encourage good civic debate. And so when I saw the other day that there was the atheist group coming out and there was apparently a rabbi there and then the Jesus Lunch people, I thought this was a great demonstration for the kids, and this is a great learning opportunity for the kids. And what troubles me, Sly, is there's lots of people, whether it be on Facebook or all over the place, that are now saying, well, we had to shut this down because this has to do with separation of church and state or whatever the argument may be, students feeling unsafe. I don't think this has anything to do with separation of church and state. First of all, these are students that are voluntarily participating in what appears to be an off-campus event at Fireman's Park. Again, we can quibble with the leasing agreement and all of that, but it appears to me that this is off-campus. Nobody's compelled to attend. there aren't any school officials, as far as I'm involved, as far as I can tell, involved in this. These are private citizens and parents that are organizing this. And if we're going to be respectful and stand up for speech that is unpopular to some students because they feel unsafe,
yeah. Well, what is it? You know, here's the common thread between the two stories we're talking about today. Students saying that they don't feel safe when the police take someone into custody or take someone out of the building for questioning in a very low tone of voice. I guess the mere act of having a police uniform makes them feel unsafe. And these other students saying they feel unsafe because parents are serving sack lunches to children that may or may not be interested in a Christian message and maybe just hungry. And that makes them feel unsafe. Do you ever remember, because I don't ever remember using that term back at Madison Memorial High School. I know we had all sorts of demonstrations. After all, it was the 70s at that school, and some of them I agreed with and some of them I didn't. But when I saw people that I disagreed with, they didn't make me feel unsafe.
Well, the First Amendment doesn't care about your feelings. Okay, it really doesn't. The First Amendment has no regard for a person's feelings. I deplore people who burn the American flag, but yet it's protected speech. And guess what? Russ Feingold agrees with the protecting that speech, even though he finds it deplorable. The late Justice Scalia agreed with that, even though he found it to be deplorable. And so, I mean, we have to protect people's speech. There does seem to be this trend, Sly, that I've noticed, too, that, you know, it's like the students at, I forget which university it was down in Atlanta, that there was sidewalk chalk that said Trump 2016. I despise Donald Trump. I disagree with all of this. But these students said, well, it makes me feel unsafe, and we don't like this Trump. So they want this Trump 2016 shock. This is becoming, I mean, it's called real life, and what I want to say is grow up. You know,
all right, there are some points of differentiation. For instance, when the students in Elkhorn were chanting at the Beloit Memorial's girls' soccer team, build the wall, Trump, 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 at them for a very clear and apparent reason because of their race. That's a little different, isn't it?
Well, it's different. It's still, I would still argue it's protected speech, even though it's deplorable. I mean, we have to protect speech that is unpopular.
All right, but students in class or at a sporting event don't have the same protected speech as an adult at a Packer game.
They don't, but what I'm saying is rather than err on the side of, look, let's use speech to condemn them. And those students were condemned, and they ought to be condemned, and they ought to be embarrassed. And frankly, I'm sure some of their parents were the ones that were instilling in them this whole build that wall. I mean, it was racist, it was disgusting, it was ugly. We want to encourage speech that is unprotected to be combated by other speech.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just start saying to students, look, I feel uncomfortable because these are Christians that are proselytized. Yes, these mothers are proselytizing to the students at Middleton High School. They are. They're proselytizing. Is anybody forcing them to go? Is this a compelled event? No, it's not. And the atheist group has every right to be there, and I would encourage a Muslim group to be there and a Jewish group to be there. This is the type of thing we ought to be encouraging as far as the civics lessons go, and not this whole, well, I feel unsafe, I feel discriminated against because it's not my religion that's being proselytized. It's not inside the school. If it were inside the school, I would have a totally different opinion on this. I would say it needs to be outside of the school. These kids should go to a private school if they want to do that. But this is not, as far as I can tell, at least on school grounds. And so this is the real world. This is what students are going to have to deal with in their everyday lives. And this is a great lesson. But I find it really troubling that there are lots of parents out there and students that are saying, well, we don't agree with the message, therefore we ought to shut it down.
What did you think of Ann Laurie Gaylor from the Freedom From Religion Foundation saying that these people were predators?
Well, she's doing, you know, if they're predators, then she is as well. She's doing the same thing. She's putting out desserts. She's got, as far as I saw, some sort of banner for the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which can only really be reasonably interpreted as trying to get people to join her group. So if the Christian parents are being predators, then she is as well. And I don't think either one of them are being predators. I think what they're doing is they're trying to convert people to their point of view in an off-campus event, and they ought to both be welcome to do that. I mean, this is America. This is what we're supposed to support. We're not supposed to be shutting down speech that we disagree with. So, you know, it seems so fundamental that it's quite shocking that we've gone into this whole thing of if somebody feels offended by something, therefore we ought to shut it down. I mean, I think it's a really, frankly, Sly, I think it's a really regressive position to take. It's certainly not progressive in my, you know, my definition of progressive. I know those are labels, but it doesn't seem to be very progressive when you're, or liberal for that matter, to be trying to shut this down.
Casey Hoff with us on the Big FM 93.7, Big AM 1380. All right, there was one more thing we were going to hit today. What was it?
Yes, Merrick Garland and Ron Johnson.
Yes. Now, Ron Johnson has said, in fact, that he said this on Mike Gushay's Upfront program on statewide television over the weekend, that he sees this as a black and white issue, and that, in fact, anyone that Barack Obama would pick would be a super legislative judge as opposed to a strict constructionist. And he said he will never, there is no such thing as a moderate judge. There's nothing in between. There's only two types of judges.
I wonder what he would say about the late Justice Patrick Crooks. Was he a super liberal or super conservative judge? No, I think by most people's opinions, he was really an independent justice. And then if you look at, you know, there are all sorts of other examples of this, of people that are I guess moderate is the word that we're using right now. Look, Merrick Garland is a person who spent a long time as a prosecutor. Frankly, he's not particularly well-liked amongst a lot of people in the criminal justice or criminal defense, I should say, community, because they feel that he sides too often with government and against criminal defendants, and I think there's a valid criticism to him there. He's very close personal friends with Chief Justice John Roberts. He's known for giving sort of these even-handed opinions. They're very cautious opinions. There's nothing that is in his life that I would construe as some sort of activist. Now,
yeah,
a lot of people, go ahead.
Well, I was just—I don't understand the—I don't understand the principle in Ron Johnson's belief, because he has voted for some of Barack Obama's federal judge appointments. Those are lifetime appointments as well. But he says the Supreme Court is different because it's more powerful. And he's protecting the conservative majority on the court as if that seat belongs to a political ideology.
Yeah, and that's what's so that's what's so sort of ironic about his position. I mean, he's talking about how he likes justices that just interpret the law. They're not liberal activist judges. They're not partisan justices. Yet he's using the late Justice Scalia's seat as, just like you said, a partisan seat that's supposed to be filled by somebody that thinks like Justice Scalia. I mean, this is despite the fact that you have people like Senator Orrin Hatch, who called Garland a fine nominee, who said that there was no question in 2010. He said that there was no question that Garland could be and would be confirmed. So, I mean, this is somebody that supervised national security investigations, the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, the Unabomber case, the 96 Olympics bombing in Atlanta. This is somebody who, by any measure, is, and I don't mean conservative in the political sense, but cautious in terms of how he rules. He's not a bomb thrower. He worked for a very prestigious sort of white-collar Washington law firm, Arnold and Porter. This is somebody who is not, I mean, he may hold some liberal views on certain issues, but he certainly has not been speaking out on things like abortion or, as far as I can tell, gay marriage. I mean, you have to remember, too, that the D.C. Circuit deals with a lot of issues that aren't nearly as political. They deal with sort of a lot of processy type Washington, D.C. issues. I would also note that the Washington Post actually did a study on these justices that have come from the D.C. Circuit specifically, and Merrick Garland was slightly to the left of John Roberts. This is not somebody that is in the mold, I would not say, of a Justice Ginsburg or even a Justice Kagan.
You know, it's interesting. Senator Feingold, when in office, voted for John Roberts and voted against Samuel Alito. But this was only after he spoke with both of them, sat and interviewed them in his office. And he didn't like some of the answers Alito gave about automatically protecting corporations. He didn't think he could be fair and impartial in that area. And evidently he felt that Roberts could. So they were both conservative justices appointed by a Republican, but he sat down and talked to them. I guess what Ron Johnson is saying, he said he'll sit down and talk to Merrick Garland, but he's got his mind made up before he asks him any questions. And
right.
I guess, you know, advise and consent. Well, you know, the truth is, if you're going to hand advice to a president or make do your due diligence as a senator, shouldn't you interview the prospect?
Of course. And you're not going through the process of holding confirmation hearings, which is exactly what advice and consent is supposed to be. If after those confirmation hearings he feels that Merrick Garland is not qualified for whatever reason, he has the right not to vote for him. But what he's trying to do is sidestep that process, and it's really sort of a cheap political tactic, because when you're looking at this from that perspective, you learn a lot about a person under essentially what amounts to cross-examination and confirmation hearings. And we've seen that in past years. And so what he's trying to do, I think, is a sneaky political move, because he probably realizes that if Merrick Garland gets up there and the American people have the chance to actually hear him speak and hear him be cross-examined by these senators, what is he so worried about? If he thinks he's this big judicial activist, this liberal judicial activist, which I don't think he is, he should have no problem and no fear about actually holding confirmation hearings. But if he's made up his mind in advance, what that tells me is he's not serious. He hasn't been from the beginning. And that's been very well known by, you know, almost immediately after Merrick Garland was announced.
And it was real clear when Scott Thompson from our morning show interviewed him, saying that if Mitt Romney made this appointment, he would likely confirm him. Casey Hoff, criminal defense attorney from Sheboygan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you, Sly.
This is Sly on the Big FM 93.7 and the Big AM 1380.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.